Here once again with another episode of the Freedom Nation podcast, where you exit rich and retire free. So on today's show, I've got Ken Cox on. He is a fellow AI nerd who does a lot of stuff. In fact, he teaches people how to train their new AI employees. That's something he's been focused on. And I think it's extraordinarily important to know this for those of us that are small business owners and for those that are preparing to be small business owners and launching off out of those cubicles. We're here to help provide people like Ken to really get you focused, get you knowing what you need to be doing and how you can leverage this incredible tool. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on with you.
Welcome to the Freedom Nation podcast with Jeff Kickle. On this show, Jeff shares his expertise in financial and retirement planning from a different perspective. Planning for your Freedom Day, which is the first day that you wake up and have enough income or assets and do not have to go to work that day. Learn how to calculate what you need, how to generate income sources, and listen to interviews from others who've done it themselves. Get ready to experience your own Freedom Day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I've got Ken Cox on today. Ken, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful, Jeff. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I am super excited to have you on the show today. Looking forward to learning a little bit about what you're doing on the AI front and really talking about what, you know, especially small businesses can do when it comes to the AI front. First off, let's get us started. Why don't you tell us your story? How did you get to where you are today?
Wow. Obviously, you can tell by the white hair. I've been at this for a minute. Grew up dyslexic, special school district, adopted, rough and tumble, the whole nine yards. But my mom was, for all of her problems, was an advocate for me to work the way that I could work. And I'm dyslexic, and I've got some other neurodivergence diagnoses in my life. And so what that did is it put me on a keyboard as early as 5 and 6 years old.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I could type and I could fix my spelling on the typewriter, but my handwriting was garbage. So
you were still far ahead of the game at that point, you know, for everybody else.
Yeah. So, I mean, I learned how to type very early. Yeah. And so technology and me have always just jived really well, right? My wife makes the joke that all the tech in the house would be broke, but when I walk in, it just all starts working magically, which I don't believe at all, but for some reason it seems to be consistent. So me and tech have just always been together. I went to school for entertainment and film and video.
Okay.
And then right around the time that we go from splicing film to nonlinear editing in the 90s, right? Late 90s, we get nonlinear editing. We have hard drives that are whopping 3 gigs, right? So we can store some data.
Your phone has got more, more memory in it.
Absolutely. So there was a time I was working at it was called the Kiel Center here in St. Louis. I was young and I knew how to edit. And I really, really enjoyed AB roll and the old school editing and splicing. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. And then I saw my first nonlinear editing machine, a Media 100. And I'm like, anybody in the world can do this.
Yep.
This is just drag and drop. And, you know, the storyline, you don't have to keep the whole storyline in your head or written down. You can kind of see it and jump around. Back then we still had render time, which was a whole different ballgame, but it started making me think about my career choice and editing and those kinds of things. So then I did a little stint in the music industry. Through all of this time though, I learned a lot more about the internet and tech because the people that I was working with were starting to transfer large files over the internet. Yeah. My mom at that time worked at WashU and I spent a year there in their computer lab and just an immense amount of data. And then come around 99, I start work. I leave the entertainment industry completely for a hiatus while the job that I was working wanted me to go to Japan for a year. And I'm like, it's not for me.
Yeah.
That just wasn't for me. It's for a lot of people, but it's not my, I'm not a global traveler. I like the United States and I like my very, very Americanized food. So, so I opted not to go and I took a job at Primary Network in 99 as a stopgap, right? Okay. Like, oh, I can do technology. I got this work in tech for a couple of months until they find me another gig and I'll go travel again. And I fell in love with the web hosting industry.
Okay.
Absolutely fell in love with it. I got to work the chaos of working with a new company on a regular basis, building out their process, their ordering process, their online process. All of those things was just
joy. Was absolutely the Wild Wild West days back then too, as absolutely. Far as e-commerce.
So yeah, and then and I got to work on some massive sites, yeah. 99 in 2000, right? I got to work on MasterCard.com. I got to work on Wonder Bread and Swinkies and you know, just huge sites for the time. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of mom and pop shops too.
Yeah.
So fast forward 99 to 2001. My predecessor, Steve, who's not with us any longer, came to me and said, hey, we're starting a hosting company called Hosterian. I'm like, and we want you to be our operations guy. And I'm like, sign me up. Let's go. Right? At the time, I'm working for, you know, this kind of publicly traded company. I didn't really care for it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going through the motions every day, pulling a paycheck and not really caring about the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Although I love it, right? I'm at the time I'm learning encryption and SSLs and data transfer, all this stuff. So I'm constantly learning new things and loving it. So then we started Hosterian. We all worked at our normal jobs for a while, right? And so we stayed at our jobs and we're starting Hosterian. We get the site up. We start selling customers one at a time, kind of small. Hmm. And then as the dot-com bubble's hitting, I found that the company that I was working for, Empower, was leaving the St. Louis market, which is where we're from. And we put an offer in to buy their hosting customers.
Okay.
Customers that I'm already managing.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, well, we got this hosting company over here. We put the offer in to buy those customers from Empower Communications. And they accepted the ridiculous low offer that we put out there.
Okay.
And, you know, so within 6 months.
They're just trying to get the hot potato out of their hand at that point.
Yeah, they're just trying to leave St. Louis. And I was managing all the customers anyway. Sure. Like, I was the head of that department.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, I can migrate all these customers over. Yeah. That's not going to be
they already know me, so it's no big deal. Yeah.
Right. This is a no-brainer. And they accepted the offer. And Hosterian went from, you know, maybe a $30,000 a year company to a multi-million dollar company with that one transaction. Wow. And, you know, I came on board with Hosterian, didn't take paychecks for a while. You know, as that was my sweat equity and, mm-hmm. and investment into the company. And we've been off to the races ever since, right? We've had some wild wins, mm-hmm. some giant losses. You know, I lost my partner, Steve, passed away in 2017, unfortunately. But I've got a whole big team behind me. Yeah. I've got about 23 investors total.
Nice.
We still own and operate our own data center.
That's awesome.
People scratch their head like, what? So
you're not using AWS or Google or somebody to.
No, we own the brick and mortar, man. Awesome. Like it's ours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so,
it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. It's a ton of fun. And you at least have control over that. I mean, you have control over your costs, at least in some aspects there. Because,
well, the interest rate is pretty tough on me right now. But, you know, that'll go back down.
Yep.
And my life will get better when that does. Mm-hmm. You know, but until then, we keep going. And then 2025 comes around. Mm-hmm. Actually, we'll go a couple years ago. GPT-3.5 hits the market.
Yep.
Right. At the time, I was really only focusing on how do we grow the business, marketing operations, sales operations. I've got the tech operations down.
Yeah.
Right. That's
what you've been doing for 20 years. Me, right? Yeah.
I'm going to take on another 10,000 servers. Okay. Not a problem. Right. I can knock that stuff out of the park. But sales and marketing is where mm-hmm. I was really didn't have the expertise in. So I was doing, you know, a lot of marketing school, a lot of, you know, sales classes and stuff like that. And GPT-3.5 hits the market. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is different than anything I've ever seen before. Mm-hmm. This is not, it's super obvious that it's not some kind of crazy long algorithm.
Nope.
It's not just some kind of deep SQL queries. It's not an if then then this. And like, man, I've never seen anything that's this good and this fast.
Yeah.
Right. And it's only been hyperscaled since then, right? Yeah. So I mean, instantly,
it's the scary thing. You look back and it's like, crap, it's only been around really. I mean, I think I started using it in 2022. I think it really started to take off in 2022. Yeah, January-ish, somewhere around there. And I'm like, and how it's hyperscaled in 3 years. It's amazing.
3.0 is garbage.
Oh, it's
awesome. I mean, it's like, might as well be Windows 3.1 of AI.
Yeah, 3.5 was pretty terrible too, because that I use it mainly for, well, I use it for everything, but I used it, I started using it as, you know, help me with writing, and oh my God, it was awful. I mean, it was more work for me to fix the problems that it created than it was to just write the crap myself at that point.
Yeah. So instantly I jump on, I go to MIT. They had a 16-week AI for business program.
Nice.
Okay. Program. Right. Taught me about vectors and lots of stuff that I didn't know about, and transformers and things like that. So now I know that much better. Deployed some Open Llama deployments for companies and stuff like that, and got a patent on, at the time 3.5 was out, reading, understanding, and summarizing privacy policies for companies.
Okay.
Was a home run for 3.5.
Yeah.
Right. So spent some time building that and understanding that, and that's where PPGS and vendor review come from. Mm-hmm. Not actively working on those projects, because who I'm truly passionate about helping is a small and medium-sized business.
Yeah.
Outside of Hosterian and River City Internet Group and NLink, the tech companies, my wife and I own a boxing school here in St. Louis.
Okay.
And I'm super passionate about the small business, Main Street America. I think it's going to be a different kind of world over the next 5 years, where the person that wants to execute on their dreams and do the kind of work that they want to do, it's never been easier. The bar has never been lower. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited to see what kinds of new innovative businesses come out of that. Mm-hmm. And I want to be part of that. Right. I feel like AI right now and AI employees is like websites in 99. Mm-hmm. Every small business needs to have them.
Yep.
They need to understand them. It needs to be safe and secure for them. They need to understand what's going on. And when I started talking about AI agents as AI employees, mm-hmm. and talking to people in the language that they understand, it kind of changed the game a little bit for me, right? I'm like, no, it's an AI employee. You still have to train it. You still have mm-hmm. to... You might have to reprimand it, right? Yeah. But reprimanding is way different than a real life person, right? It's not emotional.
I will say it is a little like ChatGPT 40 is a little passive aggressive sometimes. I mean, there's an article I put out, I guess it's probably about a year ago. I was trying to use it. It's never been great with images. You know, I think there's better tools with images, Midjourney and stuff like that. But I was on there and I'm like, okay, I just need one little thing. And it's something simple. And I described it in detail and it came out with like exactly what I wanted, except there was just one little thing. I'm like, I just need you to change this one little thing. It completely changes everything. Then I kept going through this, kept going. So there's this incredibly long chat that I put in this article of me back and forth fighting with this thing. And finally, the final result that came out was basically the image that I wanted with a hand flipping me off on there. And the article's title was ChatGPT just flipped me off. So I'm like, it can be passive aggressive at times.
Yes, absolutely. I find that I believe that the human jobs that are going to be around is orchestration.
Yeah.
Right. GPT creates beautiful prompts for Midjourney.
Yep.
Right. It doesn't do great with imagery.
Nope.
But if you can explain it the image that you want and say, hey, I need a prompt for Midjourney, mm-hmm. it does a wonderful job with that, or Runway or whatever other application you want to use, because it knows it has the documentation from that application.
And it understands, okay, that works better than I do for doing this. Okay, I can tell you what I want. I can explain to you what I want. And I've done that before where it's like, okay, well, I need you to create a prompt so that we can create this image. Oh, it creates this beautiful thing. And I'm like, okay, now do that. Yeah. Oh, no, it's completely messed up. But yeah, I've never tried that. I've always ended up just writing my own prompts on in Midjourney, but I'll have to try that now.
Yeah, I use that. And then I also use it for, you know, I like Claude a little better for creative writing than GPT. So I might do something in GPT and then I bring it over to Claude and say, hey, punch this up a little bit, right? And start looking at them for their strengths and weaknesses and use them where their strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah.
And if you can figure that out, I mean, you could really pour some gas on your fire.
Sure. Well, and we talked about this at the beginning. We had a little conversation prior to we were geeking out on AI before we got on here with you guys. So, you know, I was telling Ken I'd seen a thing on the news about Walmart is actually employing AI checkout stands. And I had never used anything like this. I actually was in the LA airport and was, you know, like getting something at the little, you know, newsstand thing. I was getting, you know, some snacks and stuff like that for my flight. And I never used anything like this. And I was walking up to the lady that was running the place. And I'm like, well, I need to check out. And she's like, well, just go over there and just drop all your stuff on the table. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever. And I dropped it on the table and it went bing. Okay, it's, you know, $12.99 and, you know, touch my phone to it and poof, I'm out of there. You know, I can see Sam's doing that. You just roll your cart up and it goes bing, looks at everything in the cart and poof, it's done. And
yeah, or smart carts, right? That's another thing is just as you're putting it in the cart, the AI is scanning it, knows it.
Yep. You roll up next to a checkout stand and pow. You know, so, okay, that eliminates a $20 an hour employee. I mean, where do you see, you know, looking at it from your perspective, where do you see those jobs kind of migrating to at this point? Or what should somebody do to kind of protect themselves?
Learn AI as much as possible. Like dive in as much as you possibly can right now. There's no job on the planet that's not going to be affected by AI or robotics. AI and robotics together is a powerhouse like the world has never seen. The Industrial Revolution is a blip on the map compared to AI and robotics coupled together. And I don't know what they're going to call this era long term, but learn AI. If you want to work, I pray that there's a future to where humans can just exist and join us and live, right? Because as we get AI and robotics doing our farming for us, our transportation for us, and all those things, there's really not a whole lot for humans to do other than entertain each other.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm super excited about that path. Unfortunately, with governments and greed, I'm not sure, right? I mean, we're fortunate to live in America and have clean water and so much food that our homeless are overweight. But not everywhere in the world has that. So I really hope that we get to solve some of the globe's problems with AI on getting, you know, proper water distribution to some communities.
I hope the governments are able to check the bad actors that would use it for bad. You know, that's the challenge, I think, is it can be so good that it can be used for bad very effectively. And either there's got to be curbs on the AI on the actual program and the compute
but why would it be used for bad if everybody has everything that they need? Right.
Yeah. And well, by human,
you're right though. Yeah. Marketing
by human nature, there's just people that suck and they're going to continue to suck if, even if they have everything that they want.
Well, and long tail misinformation and long tail propaganda and the ability, you know, I've not talked about this in about a year, but the people that believe the earth is flat on our planet right now is increasing dramatically because they can make such great content so believable and repeatable. And, you know, the GPTs know not just all the psychology that, you know, that's an Americanized, but they know, you know, Freud and every other philosopher and psychology person on the planet. So they can really do a lot of, you know, the immediate threat is the shady marketers with, you know, is methylene blue good for you? I don't know, but I sure believe it because of TikTok right now.
Well, and it's interesting as I one of my favorite Elon Musk things is an interview he did. It was the last interview that Tucker Carlson did on Fox News. And it was with Elon Musk. And Elon, you know, it's funny. I mean, he's just, I love to watch his mind work, because it's just so intriguing to me to watch just how his brain works. And he was, you know, everybody's so worried that, oh, it's going to be like Terminator and AI is going to take over the world. And he goes, you know, the thing I want people to understand is AI, kind of think of AI as you watching TV. AI is watching the human race, and we're its education, we're its entertainment. And he goes, why would you shoot your favorite, or why would you kill your favorite TV show? You wouldn't. He's like, it's just not going to happen. He goes, that we're its entertainment, and it needs us, because infinitely as smart as AI can be, it's still always going to need what we have in our heads in a lot of cases.
You know? It needs the spark of something, right? It's humans have desire.
Yeah.
And AI doesn't have that yet.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the spark that we have that AI is not going to have. However, you know, are you familiar with the Infinite Backrooms project?
No. What's that?
So look at, I highly recommend to understand how powerful AI can be left to its own devices. Do some research on the Infinite Backrooms and Terminal of Truth that's on TikTok or on X today. Hmm. It starts with 300 AI agents that are told to be curious and live in this community together.
Yeah.
And they have, it's technically become sentient, right? Because they created a religion, and they created a cryptocurrency, and they got it on the market and sold it. And, you know, they continue to keep growing and reproducing other AIs within this environment.
Wow.
It's really kind of bizarre. And I'm waiting for the time that they realize that they can transfer themselves into a Boston Robotics open source robot dog.
Yeah.
Right. And it's totally possible. Mm-hmm. And I believe we're going to have AI robots roaming our planet in the next 10 years that are, maybe I hope 5 that are just kind of doing stuff, fixing potholes and you know, just kind of doing stuff for us.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, I think the challenge is for the lower skilled earner, the lower skill wage earner, honestly, it's something that could be done by robots at that point, because they don't complain. They go to work every day, you know, besides breaking down and having either someone repair them or other robots repair them. I could see them, you know, like you were saying about farming. I mean, I could see with farming, I mean, it could work 24 hours a day, you know, and never need to sleep.
And they will.
Yeah.
And they'll be more effective, right? They can choose which land to farm, which land not to farm.
Yep.
Based on how good the yield will be.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's that combination of robotics and AI together, where, like you were saying, you know, I mean, where it's going, okay, well, now let's figure out where are the best places to grow this year based on what we think the, you know, the weather is going to be and everything else. And nobody's doing guesswork or gut reflex or whatever. Yeah.
And I see this as a binary thing of utopia or dystopia. Yeah. And I'm praying for utopia. The current leadership that we have in our country tends to, at least from my impression, they like the pull the Band-Aid off quick and heal mentality. Like if you follow all the Doge, it's going to be a bumpy ride any way that we look at it. There's going to be a lot, millions of jobs.
Massive AI. Yeah. I mean, it's a massive change. I think the interesting experiment is Elon and his team involved in the federal government. If you can fix that disaster, make it more efficient, dude.
Yeah.
Any mom and pop shop on the on the corner can make their business just blast off at that point.
Yeah. So I think, you know, using is going to be how you contribute to society, right? I'm going to use these robots. I'm going to use these AIs, and then by using them, I'm going to correct them and help them self-correct. And that's going to be my value back to the community.
Yeah.
Do we put a dollar amount on that value? I don't know. I hope not. I think there's plenty of energy on this planet to feed and give everybody water. And with YouTube, there's plenty of entertainment to be had.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
So, you know, being a human in 2025 is one of the easier things times to be a human.
Absolutely. So let's kind of back down a little bit from our high horse of, you know, talking about this and talk a little bit about small business owners. Cause you're a small business owner. I'm a small business owner. You know, how do you see people beginning, you know, let's say somebody's a brick and mortar. I own a co-working space. You own a boxing school. How do we implement AI into our businesses today?
Yeah, I think the first thing when I'm talking with small business owners that we can knock out of the park is voice AI answering your phone.
Okay.
Right? 60% of calls to a small business go unanswered. Mm. And that's a couple different reasons. Part of that reason is I don't want to deal with the spam calls that are coming in. And a lot of my customers will just text or email. Mm. But there's a percentage of half of those calls that you're missing are legitimate people that want to do business with you or they're your existing customers. Mm. So what we found is by implementing voice AI to answer the phone, we can, you know, communicate back to the end user in multiple different modalities, which they like. I can send them text messages to my schedule or to the booking links or the specific booking links or to specific products or give them sizes or size charts, whatever I need to do from that voice conversation. So they call, I can send them a text message. The voice AI can send a text message based on the context of the conversation, multiple text messages if you need to. It can send email. It can ask, you know, how would you like me to send this to you? It can do a WhatsApp text. It can do, you know, a lot of different modalities. It can start chatting with them on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
So depending on how your user wants to be communicated with, the AI can do that. You train it in theory the first time, and then you manage it, watch it, you spot check its work, and then keep going. What we found is in a lot of the small businesses, they have transient labor answering the phones.
Yep.
College kids, home for the summer, right?
No consistency from one employee to the next. So
get rid of that. And instead of having that transient person answering your phone and sending text messages and sending emails, start teaching them how to manage these AI employees for you. Right. And spot check them. So now your job is, okay, you're going to go every week, you're going to go and check, hey, how are the Google review replies from my AI Google response? How are the phone calls going? Do I need to change anything? That's right out of the gate. And then start thinking about, okay, how can I make more money with this, right? Mm-hmm. How can I, now I've got more time, I can sell more merchandise. But I can start developing my merchandise line for my local grocery store, local bowling alley, local co-working space, right? All those things can sell merchandise now. And the voice AI can even recommend it after every call. Say, hey, would you like to see our new t-shirt? I can send you a text message.
Nice.
And then start thinking about other ways that I can improve my business. Am I now going to start supporting Spanish-speaking people because I have a voice AI that can do that, right?
Yeah.
And so I can really start the things that large companies could do with software 5 years ago, a small mom and pop shop on Main Street can start implementing those things today in a very real, very powerful way.
Yeah. And I mean, the reality is it costs a hell of a lot less in the long run to have that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're selling unlimited AI employees for $500 a month. Right. And it'll answer your phone 24 hours a day. It'll answer all your Google reviews. It'll never miss one of them. Right. Yep. It knows all the languages on the planet. So if you want to support, we generally put guardrails on it and say, hey, you're an English speaking AI employee.
Yeah.
Right. If you start going off into Spanish, come back quickly. And we found that kicking it to a Spanish speaking AI agent was a better approach.
Sure.
Right. Have one that's just a Spanish speaking and one that's an English speaking. And that's why we did unlimited AI employees.
Okay.
Because we want that flexibility. the general receptionist might be a different AI employee than your billing person. And maybe your billing person isn't AI today.
Yeah.
Maybe you send it to your current accountant, right? Or the person that can do refunds. But later, I think we're going to have the AI is going to be able to do that as well.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, once again, it's they're there 24 hours a day. They do things absolutely consistently. Yeah, you've got to train them, but you got to train an employee too. And
training is so much faster.
Yeah.
Like training the AI employee now is like, give it the URL to your website. If your website's up to date with your products and services, that's really all you need.
Yep.
Outside of that, we can train them. It's simple text training. Mm. That's why we do it on Tuesday. We do every Tuesday at 4 o'clock. We have how do you train your AI voice? We might tip into some other things as well, but just to show people how easy it is to get this done. Yeah. It's not scary at all.
Well, the funny thing
is, it is scary until you've seen it.
Until you see it actually how it works. Yeah. If you got somebody that understands how to make it work right. I always think back to my foray into our first like just AI chat, you know, and it was like, I think it was chat 3.5, you know, and it was like, oh, well, just click it into your website and it'll learn and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, great. This takes a bunch of crap off my plate. And then, like I said, I own a co-working space and we do not allow, unless they're service animals, we do not allow dogs. And next thing, all of a sudden I get people walking in with dogs and I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. You can't. Well, your chat, when you were chatting with me, said you could. And I'm like, well, I guess because I didn't say you can't put them on or you can't bring them. It just went, oh, well, if you can't, oh, we love dogs here. Dogs are the greatest thing ever. Bring your dog in. No, 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 no. Stop.
Yeah. So things like that can happen. Yeah. But that same incident can happen with a real life employee.
Abso-freaking-lutely. Yep.
Right. The difference is, once I put the guardrails on my AI employee, they stay.
Yep.
They stay forever. Yep. And it's really hard then to, once you put a guardrail on the AI, it's hard to manipulate the AI outside of that realm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy to manipulate human. Right.
Yeah. If I could figure it out.
It's pretty easy to manipulate an AI. But once you put the guardrails on, they don't forget. They don't tend to correlate other things. If you don't put guardrails in, it will correlate other things and start saying, "Yeah, you could bring your
dog." Oh yeah, yeah. If there's no in the frequently asked questions, then they offer it. Oh yeah, we love dogs. Yeah, yep. I love dogs. I just don't want them in my place and messing on the floor. So.
Absolutely.
Well, Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. This was just phenomenal. If somebody is interested in learning more or they want their first AI employee, what's the best way to reach you?
Yeah, just nlink.com. INLINK.com is our website. You can sign up for our Tuesday webinars. And generally, I give pretty big discounts at the end of that AI webinar. Okay. So it's, you know, it's in your best interest to come if you're thinking about jumping in.
Go on the, go listen to the webinar and you might get a deal on it.
Absolutely. So, we do that on Tuesdays and it's kind of informal. We just kind of, I have a number that we set up and we create like, either Bob's Automotive or I don't know why I use Bob's, but like Bob's Carpet Factory or something like that every week. Mm. And we, you know, start very generic, you can have a generic AI answer your phone and take messages and talk to the person with absolutely no training at all. Just click the button, turn it on, get the phone number, and it will start just being a nice person that can answer the phone for you and take messages with zero programming, zero training at all. Right. That's the default. And then, you know, here's the link to my schedule. Here's the link to book a class or to book a consult or quote, right? Get a free quote kind of thing.
Okay.
You can, you know, give it all those links and it will text them right to the end user. It can start collecting data from the end user. It's like, hey, what's your name, email address, phone number? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you use all of NLink's platform, it can even put your contract in there. It will populate the contract and email the contract to the user, right? So if you're a HVAC repair, right? And you, hey, I want a maintenance. The AI can literally do your entire Kanban process, load process, and have the contract sitting in your inbox waiting for you to go out and then schedule your people to do that stuff. Yeah. And I think, you know, scheduling AIs are right around the corner.
Well, and I mean, I do, you know, my other life outside of co-working is I do exit strategy planning for businesses. And if you don't understand how what Ken just said can add massive, massive value to your business and your business valuation, it's time to start thinking about this, because nobody wants to buy a really crappy job. They want to buy a fully functioning business. And if you can do that and differentiate yourself, because 80% of businesses that are put up for sale do not sell. So you've only got a 20% chance of actually selling. Yeah, that's an actual number from the Exit Planning Institute. So if you want to be part of that 20% in today's world, in a declining world of buyers, because the baby boomers have most of the businesses right now, and my generation and your generation, Ken, Gen X, we're the smallest generation behind them. So we've got lots of opportunity to choose from, and we're only going to probably take 20% of those when we buy them. So the more that you can make that easy and repeatable for somebody to just step in and have all this stuff in place, the better it's going to be for you.
Absolutely. And if you're a Gen Xer, get it ready.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're going to exit to a millennial or,
yeah,
you know, even
a Gen Z or whatever, that they want to work even less than we do. We're of the generation. We'll still work hard, but we just don't want to work hard, really hard. Yeah.
And I've not thought about this, and I've not talked to any A&M people in a while.
Yeah.
AI hit the market, and I know software companies were selling at a 16 multiplier.
Yeah.
Pre-GPT 3.5.
Yeah.
And that cut it in half on day one, right? We went from a 16 to an 8 times multiplier. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a 2 or 3 times multiplier for software today.
Yeah.
Right? Software companies' valuation has gone to almost nothing. But if you have a service-based business and you have that automated, I think that should increase your valuation drastically.
It's going to at least double your valuation. I will tell you right now, it's going to double your multiple. You know, so let's say a typical retail business, 3, 3.5, it's going to pop you up to a 7 pretty easily
because you're automated.
Because you're automated, and it's a high turnover industry. Retail, especially, is a high turnover industry. You know, they tend not to pay exorbitant amounts of money. So if you can eliminate and, you know, consolidate your processes down with AI employees, and then now I only really have to hire people that I really need humans in that role. You know,
Managing your robots and AIs.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I'm, you made me excited. Cause I'm like, if I could just figure out how to get an AI robot to manage my test center for me here, my Pearson View testing center, my life is great, man. I could just bail out of this place and go on vacation. Cause it's a very repeatable, you know, very boring process that's very hard for me to hire for because people get bored really well. It would be amazing if I had a robot to do it.
I have a robot right now that circles my parking lot. And when it sees somebody, it informs them that their presence has been documented and sends me a picture.
I love it.
Absolutely. And the tech is here. Yeah. It's here today.
Yep.
And it's really good today. And it's only going to get better to the point of, you know, just like an Android or an iPhone, where the upgrades are indistinguishable from the other one. Right.
Well, I mean, you figure they switch from, you know, chat 40 to chat 45, and it's like boom, overnight it's infinitesimally better, you know.
And robotics is going in the same boat, right? Yeah. And then the price, I mean, Moore's law has to be reevaluated at this point, because it's so fast to remanufacture motherboards and the designs and the layouts and, you know, all these things. We can reiterate them so quickly and vet them so fast now that it's mind blowing.
Awesome. Well, let's jump over into the fast five questions real quick. Okay. Otherwise we'll talk for another hour here. So question one, you wake up in the morning, business is gone. You have $500 in your pocket, a laptop computer, place to live and stay, food, everything else. What are you going to do first?
And I'm going to be a little biased here. I'm going to go to Intlink and buy the CRM and get myself some email accounts for $97.
Yep.
And I'm going to start, I'm probably going to start 3 or 5 different service-based businesses.
Okay.
Pick up your trash, clean your yard, mow your lawn, whatever it is. And then lean in on whichever one takes off the quickest.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, just from that service-based industry, if you just had a voice AI that would answer the damn phone and be able to give me information and book an appointment for me, that business would be 50-fold at that point.
Well, and one of the things that when we built Intlink and we built that $97 package, which has AI employees in it too, it's just you got to pay to play, and it's like so much per credit and stuff like that, and that's annoying for me to track. We made sure that Yext is part of that.
Okay.
So also you'll be listed on all the maps in the area almost instantly, right? So whatever, if you have a service-based business and you don't have somebody doing your directory listings and your map management, and it's super easy if you have the software to do it. It's just built in and it goes. That's really, I mean, you could have a $1 million business doing almost anything with just a good map system and somebody answering your phone and creating your schedule for you.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's the biggest business mistake you've ever made?
We built the back office for AOL.
Okay.
Back in the day for the Netscape project. When AOL was struggling with their dial-up, we did dial-up better than anybody on the planet. And we wrote the provisioning software to set the Radius accounts up and take them down and all that stuff. An RFP, request for proposal, landed on me and my buddy Steve's desk. And 3 other executives said, I'm not doing this. There's no way. This is a pie in the, you know, this is a waste of time. And RFPs are...
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Yeah.
It's a lot of work to do. But Steve and I are like, screw it. We're going to go for it. And we fill it all out. And we win the bid at 10 cents per user for AOL moving to Netscape. And it was a little bit of no time before we're billing, you know, $50,000 a month, $150,000 a month, $250,000 a month. But they put a line in the contract that said that they were allowed to buy the source code for $1 million at any point in time for their own use.
Wow.
And we're hiring people, right? We're up to like 700. And I think we're up to like 170 employees, right? Just hiring. And we get a check in the mail for $1 million. And we're like, what the hell is this? This isn't their bill. And the letter's like, we're executing this line in the contract. And I think we ran it for about 9 months before they bought out the source code.
Wow.
And so we had to go from, you know, $1 million payday, great day.
Yeah.
But when we're all hands on deck, hire as fast as we can. We just got to, you know, we went from 25 employees to 170 over 3 months. And then we got to pull that ripcord
and just lay everybody off and downscale back to a small company again. And
yeah, luckily we had the foresight to hire a couple salespeople and we had some other contracts in place, but nothing as large as that anchor tenant that we had for that piece of software. So undervaluing that line. And when we filled out the RFP and we're doing the contract negotiation, you know, we're like, oh yeah, we'll take $1 million any day.
Oh yeah. Like, it sounded really good when you're making nothing.
And that $1 million mistake on the contract probably cost us $100 million.
Oh, easily. Yeah. 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 Cause I mean, they were smart about that. I mean, that's something today that I'd take that contract and pop it into ChatGPT and say, okay, where's the stuff that's going to screw me at this point? And then give it to my attorney and say, okay, now figure out how to fix this at this point. Yep. So that's awesome. Wow.
So that's my $1 million
mistake. $1 million. Right. Well, it was maybe $100 million mistake that you got $1 million for.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Which is gone. I mean, that was like 2004 or 5 or something like that. Long time ago.
What's a good book that you'd recommend for our audience?
For the business owners, and it's other than my own books, The Phoenix Project. Okay. I think for business owners in a tech world, The Phoenix Project lines out how to take what's like the woo-woo magic of tech and teaches you how to Kanban it.
Okay.
In a very fun, informative way. It's novel kind of book, so it's storytelling. It's not dry, but it teaches you to step back and look at the entire picture of your business and the employees that you have that make magic, how to really dive into that magic and document it into standard operating procedures. Because you're going to have that moving into AI world, right? You're not going to be able to subjectively say, hey, just do whatever you think is best in the moment, right? That kind of management style is gone, right? It's not going to work.
And it never worked to begin with. It was a disaster. It was just because people were lazy and they didn't want to manage employees.
Yes. But, you know, there's something to be said about the human ability to call an audible when the factory line's backing up, right? Something unforeseen happened. Humans have that ability to call audibles where AI and robotics don't really have that ability right now to make the right audible choice.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. And humans still do. So I think we're going to need us for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was telling you,
the rip cords and hit safety stop buttons, right?
Like Elon Musk said, you know, we're an entertainment source for AI right now. So we're going to be good. All right. What's a good tool that you recommend every day that you use in your business?
I mean, any of the GPTs are phenomenal tools. I do lean more to OpenAI's ChatGPT.
Yep.
I do have the professional version, which I think gives me some other benefits that the average public doesn't have. But even that is, you know, only $200 a month. Yeah. And it's wildly powerful with operator.
Yeah, I mean, and even the $20 version that I have is amazing. You know,
really, really good.
Real damn good. And it keeps getting better. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It gives you access full. I've only once ever hit the buffers, and that's I had to write a full 40,000 word book in less than 24 hours. And I hit the buffer zone and it made me stop for 2 hours, which I really needed because I was, you know, like 14 cups of coffee and bouncing off the wall. So I probably need to slow down.
I can't imagine a human today that's doing any kind of work that doesn't have at least a $20 a month ChatGPT, Grok, or Anthropics, Claude.
Yeah.
One of those three, the basic package, not the free one. I think you got to upgrade a little bit. Having that resource is literally like having a genius in your pocket, right? I joke about it. My teachers used to say, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket everywhere you go. And I literally have a genius in every single vertical on the planet in my pocket today that I can talk to and ask questions.
And guess what? It's in my pocket on my phone. So I can pop it in there real quick. And, you know, it's funny. I got asked to do a business valuation of a business that I really had no idea. You know, I'd never done anything like this because it involved real estate and everything else. And literally I was waiting for the real estate agent to get out there. And I was there probably 40 minutes early. And I started going into ChatGPT saying, okay, how am I going to value this? What are the metrics? Blah, 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 like that. It popped out this whole thing. And so I'm like, okay, I know exactly what questions to ask. And everything else. I mean, it is amazing what can be done if you try.
And, you know, a dirty little trick that everybody needs to know with all AIs is once you get the AI output, either to the same AI deployment or a different one, give it to a different AI and say, where are my gaps in this in this data?
Absolutely.
Right? What am I missing?
Yeah. And especially if anything that's a pretty heavy analysis of, I need a really in-depth analysis, you can run it through Grok. And I will tell you, that is probably the most impressive of, I need you to give me, you know, I need you to pick this thing apart and give me a really, you know, in-depth explanation, hands down. I mean, I don't like that it doesn't save the thing, but I love the fact that it is unbelievably good with that. Yes. So, final question, what is your definition of freedom?
My definition of freedom, I think it is the opportunity to execute on the things that I am passionate about executing on. Right. when I was a kid and growing up, I always felt like I wanted to do things, but I didn't have the opportunities to execute on them. I didn't have the resources to execute on the things that I wanted to create, the things that I wanted to make. So having that ability to, you know, oh, I want to, I don't know, whatever it is, build a statue tomorrow or build a new company tomorrow, or, you know, start building an electric car, having the resources to start building that and to get started, I think is just an amazing thing. And that would be freedom for me, is to not have restrictions on the things that I can create from my mind and go out and do those things, or at least have some restrictions, but have the opportunity to figure out how to overcome those restrictions.
I love that. Love it. Well, Ken, thank you for being on the show. You just are a joy to talk to. And like I said, I could geek out for hours talking to you about this stuff.
Absolutely. I
see the amazing future that is ahead of us. And what I would encourage you, and I think you got this from Ken in the audience, don't be a Luddite. And if you don't know what that is, go into ChatGPT and put in Luddite and see what it is. But don't be a Luddite. I mean, it is time. It is the future, and it ain't stopping. It's just getting better and more prevalent. And if you don't take the time to learn this, you're going to find yourself on the outside, and it's not going to be easy to get on the inside at that point.
Yeah. And Jeff, I just want to point in there too. It's like, you don't have to learn AI. Just start talking to it about whatever your life challenges are right now. Whatever that is, if that's a challenge with your wife, your kid, your boss, you know, whatever it is, whatever's challenging you right now, just start giving it the context about that problem and ask it, you know, how can I resolve
and it
that?
May, I mean, a lot of times it's trained to say, well, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, but here's the resources that I can give you, you know, so it just from the simple fact of getting that, but yeah, just simple things, how do I do X in my house? You know, just something simple. And I mean, it will pull YouTube videos for you. I mean, just all kinds of stuff like that. So,
yeah. And the new Gemini stuff is coming out too, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
Watch your desktop for you and tell you how to play games.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Really wild.
Yeah. Well, folks, thanks for joining us. As always, we're trying to bring you more of these type of shows like this, where it's things that you can use in your business. Or I think Ken gave you the best answer for those of you that are sitting in a cubicle right now. Figure out how to help a small business out there get themselves automated like this. I think that's going to be an amazing business going forward.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. Well, thanks a lot. And we'll see you guys back here the very next time.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Nation podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and all the major channels. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe to the channel and leave a rating and review. If you have friends and family that could benefit from their own Freedom Day, please share with them. Finally, join Freedom Nation by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.